I think after he has done with that, we'll be taking Kosatu. I think it's also important to share with you, honorable members, that after Parliament has advertised as required for this meeting, inviting the public and other organizations, civil organizations, we only received for public hearing, we only received a response from COSATU, the submission, the written submission from COSATU. So having said that, honorable members, I think I need to confirm that we have received the relevant documents from the Secretariat on Friday, I think, yeah, and the draft minutes yesterday. I also welcome National Treasury. I understand National Treasury is on the platform, PBO and FFC teams. You are humbly welcomed. You'll be assisting and engaging or giving clarities in some and guidance in the deliberations. And let me remind members from the provinces, you have all the powers and privilege to participate fully in this division of revenue that we are dealing with. So you are most welcome, and your deliberations or your inputs will be highly appreciated. Let me check honorable members with the Secretariat about the process.
Hello, Chairperson.
Yes, Olubabalo.
I'm sorry, Chair. We lost you a little bit because of the power signal. You are calling for apologies. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Chair, we received an apology from Honorable Njadu due to another commitment that he has this morning.
Okay.
Another apology that we received is from the province of Limpopo. The portfolio committee is unable to join us because the house sits. Those are the only apologies we received. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson?
Yes.
Sorry, Chairperson, it's Estelle speaking.
Okay.
Morning, Chair. I also just this morning received an apology from the Chairperson of the Finance Committee in the Northern Cape, Honorable Maneng. But there are other members of the Northern Cape, Honorable Van Staden and Roda, who has joined us as well as staff.
Okay, honorable members from Northern Cape, you're welcome. Feel free to engage. We note the apology from the Chairperson. That's all from the apologies. Is that all, Secretary?
Yes, Chairperson, that's all. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. If you can assist, I don't know if Salga, Councillor Baloyi, are you going to be able to flag your presentation? I want to invite you now to make your presentation because we have a sitting also after this meeting.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Let me also greet the honorable members, and I must thank them for creating the space and time for us to come and make our very important inputs on behalf of the South African Local Government Association. I think, Chair, from the outset, it's important for one to appreciate the time and space we find ourselves in. But also it's important for me to clarify that I am no longer Councillor Baloyi. That's my past. I'm now a Mr. Baloyi, which is sufficient. So I no longer carry any legal fiduciary and statutory responsibility on behalf of our government. So now I'm just an outsider, But Chair, I must also clarify the position of SALGA. We are the, we have a constituted, legally constituted NEC. We are outgoing and working towards constituting in various provincial assemblies and building up to our national assembly next year, February, for a new leadership to take over SALGA. And in the interim, we still remain a properly constituted leadership of SALGA, and therefore we do still represent SALGA. Chairperson, there's a delegation of three other people that I'm with. There's also Honorable Trungwane from Mpumalanga. There's also Khumutso and Babu Nqeba. I think Khumutso is going to slide the presentation and deliver the presentation on our behalf, Chair, and then we can take the questions later. Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Khumutso, are you able to do that?
Thank you very much. Good morning, Chair, and members of the committee. I am trying to fly the presentation on my side. I'm not sure, is it visible?
Not yet. Luwalo can help.
Let me try once more.
If it's troubling you, Ms. Khumutso, I can easily assist you at the side.
Okay. Let me try once more, Luwalo, on my side. Okay, yeah, I think I've got it. I've got it. Then I'll just put it on slideshow as well. Okay, so good morning once more, Chair, and to the members of the committee and also the delegation from SALGA, as well as National Treasurer and FLC. My presentation is about 28 slides, but Chair, what I will do, based on the time constraints that you basically outlined, is to basically go very quickly through the macroeconomic outlook as it lays the context in terms of the medium-term budget policy statement. So just from the beginning. So basically, this is pretty much the outline of the presentation, and I will just go straight into it. And basically, this is just to provide select committee on appropriation with the organized local government comments on the 2021 medium-term budget policy statement. So of course, SALGA is part of the budget forum together with COFTA and as well as National Treasury, and basically the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act prescribes that the minister consult with SALGA in, either in the budget forum or in any other way in terms of budget-related and financial-related matters. So just to outline the participation process and the timeline as well, of course, excluding the technical budget forums, which would basically be a sitting that precedes the actual budget forums, that the minister announced the budget speech in February, and then that was basically then followed by the budget forum that was also held in July, to also consider other policy related aspects that we've reported previously in this committee on. And of course, in October, the budget forum, and then in November, we saw the tabling. And then last week, we went to the standing committee to outline the comments of the organized local government. And of course, today, we're here presenting to the select committee on appropriation. And just on the macroeconomic outlook, there would not, based on COVID, the economy was hit very hard, and of course, because we come from a long base, and hence the 5.1% growth in the economy for 2021, but also that expected to actually return back to the pre-pandemic levels, of course, which will then also then have an impact in terms of the overall fiscal. And also important to note is the issue around the fiscal deficit, expected to narrow from 7.8 from 2021 to 2022 to 4.9 of GDP in 2024 and 2025, and based on the fiscal consolidation approach that National Treasury has been basically undertaking, and as well as, I guess, from requests from rating agencies and as well as investors in terms of the fiscal reform to set the country on a path of sustainability. And again, I think the issue is the issue around the overall gearing in government in terms of the gross government debt, basically to GDP. And of course, here the increase basically means that a huge part of the allocation would basically go to debt servicing costs, and hence a huge push in terms of reforms to make sure that I think as a country, we can then allocate funds and towards a service delivery related aspect. So debt is expected to peak at around 78.1% by 2025-26. And of course, there's a correlation in terms of the amount of budgets that will then be allocated to debt service because away from services. And then this is basically just to indicate the overall revenue in terms of what has been outlined in the MTPPS compared to where we were basically in February. And I would not go much into it, but I think important to note, Chair, is the issue around the huge increase in terms of part of the population that's basically reliant on social grants, and as well as the issue around unemployment rate, and meaning that local government will also be hard hit in that particular regard, given that in terms of the MFMA, the sector is not required to go to debt capital markets like national to basically balance the budget, and is completely reliant on its customers and households, as well as businesses paying for the services that have been consumed. And of course, if generally households are basically overstretched, it means the financial sustainability of the sector is also at risk and the ability to basically deliver services. And basically, this is also just to compare the vertical allocation from February to where we are currently. The two spheres that are basically on a relative basis that have been hit is basically both the local sphere and the provincial sphere. So we've seen a drop from just 9% to 8.5% for local government, and of course for provincial government from 41.5% to 40.9% with the increase to national sphere to basically 50.6%. And Chair, you'd remember, I think in terms of the various engagement, we've always raised SALGA, the issue around the vertical allocation, which also became a subject of discussion basically through the budget forum based on the various papers that the three organizations, which is basically COPTA, National Treasury, and SALGA put together in terms of re-looking at the issue around the allocation basically to local government, and especially around the equitable share, and not just focus on the formula, which will sort out the issues around the horizontal allocation only, and that work is basically underway. So basically the next slide is to compare where we were. The bottom table that says budget 2021 was in February, and basically the top table is basically where we are currently. And you'd see that there's basically a drop. It's from 138.1 to 137.6 billion in 2021-2022. Although there's a marginal increase for the outer year, and we really appreciate the increase, however small in certain instances, just given the tight rope based on the prevailing economic conditions. So if we move to the next slide, you'll see if we compare where we were in February, which is the first bar, there was a drop of about 0.5%. And then basically in 2022-2023, there's a drop of about 0.3%. And basically then it's constant for 2023-2024. Compared to where we were basically in February and based on those projections. And if we go into the actual statements and the various parts as well, that there's a proposal to allocate about 48.4% to national departments, 42% to provinces, and 9.6% to local government over the next 3 years. And basically our position as well is that the proposed increase to local government over the next 3 years will gradually bring to reality the promise contained in white paper on local government. We support this with the understanding of the current prevailing economic conditions and basically the very tight fiscal space that we find ourselves as a country, but also the commitment to really relook at the overall funding or the various spheres of government in relation to the constitutional responsibilities as well as the reality that we find ourselves in as local government. In terms of the adjustment, there's no adjustment to the equitable share allocation currently. So at the time when the numbers were basically finalized, there was a court proceeding basically between NERSA and ESCOM, which meant that estimates would be used in terms of the increase around electricity. And of course, it's an issue that was also raised as a risk rather in the budget forum, that in an event that what has been projected in preparation of the numbers is not aligned to the actual outcome based on the court proceedings, the relevant adjustment must be made to ensure that the sector is basically not underfunded in that particular regard. So that's the submission that we basically made. And then the issues around local government equitable share formula has been updated, as I basically indicated as well, that's basically work in progress in terms of re-looking at the overall formula as well. There's a number of data streams that, for instance, that SSA is basically currently looking at as well, and then looking at the aspects around the vertical allocation. And that's part of the resolutions that came basically out of the budget forum. But we really appreciate, I think, as local government in terms of the move towards cost-reflective allocation to adequately cover the cost of providing basic services basically to communities. Around the infrastructure fund, ensuring that total investment in public infrastructure is nearly 30% of gross fixed capital formation by 2030, and maintaining the commitment to the fund and including about 100 billion over the decade. And also just given that local government being service delivery facing fear of government and its performance it's positively and highly related to the state of the infrastructure, and definitely the aspect around the infrastructure backlog and how we fund that. We have partnered with DBSA and basically Infrastructure Fund South Africa as well in looking at ways to support the sector, and especially around project preparation, so that we can then start tapping into the alternative sources of financing in driving and narrowing the gap around infrastructure rollout. And then basically just this is just to highlight the changes in the allocation. And in the main really is the 841 million that has been allocated to metros and added to the Neighborhood Development Partnership Grant in terms of driving employment. And really our comment at that point in time was to going forward to make sure that this covers the sector as a whole, although metros constitute over 50% of the budget in terms of the overall local government, but all municipalities would have taken a hit in terms of the prevailing economic environment that we basically find ourselves in. And then the other aspect probably to note is the issue around the 1.3 billion that has been returned by the city of Cape Town in terms of the rollout of the BRT and the under expenditure in that particular regard. And also an aspect that we basically welcome as SALGA. However, we had made a submission for a much wider coverage is the 81 million that was basically allocated to George Municipality, local municipality, for the implementation of the Potable Water Security and Remedial Well Project. And however, we do appreciate the fact that the other municipalities would have failed in the submissions that were basically made, and also highlighting the need of supporting municipalities around project preparation and hence our collaboration and partnership with ISA, as well as DBSA in terms of capacitating municipality to basically prepare projects so that they can basically take advantage of these facilities that are basically available. And then the other aspect that I thought we just need to highlight as well is the issue around the system grant, 100% allocation for the operation of the DDM. As much as we support the DDM basically as local government, but we are concerned with the redirecting of local government grants towards national to basically support basically the sector. And just given the capacity challenges that are basically experienced in the sector. And then we also appreciate the rollover of about 582 million in terms of the regional bulk infrastructure grant towards Mfuleni River pollution remediation remediation project, and some of the changes basically to local government allocation. And then reviewing the structure of for local government fiscal framework between August 2020 and July, the special Lokhotla budget of the budget forum as a basically indicated, established to facilitate consultation on local government finances met three times to discuss municipal sustainability, and there were resolutions and quite a number of them that basically came out of those deliberations as well. And I think among the issues around asset infrastructure, maintenance and management, and as well as looking at the overall fiscal sustainability of the sector, but most importantly is the issue around the various support programs that are targeted towards the sector that have not necessarily yielded basically much results, and also the resolution to have a much more differentiated approach to be much more impactful, and also collaborating and cooperating between the National Treasury, COGTA, and basically SALDA. And we think if we organize ourselves really better in terms of how we approach the sector from a support point of view, we'll definitely yield positive results in that particular regard. I think the issue around the capacity and also the over reliance on in terms of consultants have basically been flagged by the AG and also the NEC of SALGA, very concerned about the fact that in certain instances, despite the utilization of consultants, municipalities have not actually yielded any benefits in that particular regard. And as part of the extracting accountability and consequence management over and above the support program on municipal audit outcomes that SALGA has been rolling out over the years, basically actively engaging with the mayors and as well as the municipal managers to make sure that the audit plans actually respond to the issues that are continuously flagged by the AG, but also to assist us to have a much more differentiated approach in terms of the various municipalities that will basically be assisting. So it's basically a two-way process in that regard. And that's the enhancement that we're actually making in SALGA in terms of the municipal audit support program that we have in place. So I will not touch on this. So this is just pretty much that over and above the resolutions around holding the sector and those that are leading the sector accountable in terms of the audit outcomes is to make sure that in the finance offices, the right people and competent people are basically appointed as a point of departure, so that then even the training programs that are basically provided by the various government departments could actually yield the desired results. And then in terms of the electricity side, we welcome the policy changes that would actually see municipalities participating meaningfully in terms of diversifying the energy mix and also taking advantage of this policy reforms around the electricity industry and the distribution and generation basically reforms. And of course, this would also almost amend also the revenue base of the municipalities and the need to basically support municipalities in terms of making sure that despite this particular challenge, despite these opportunities from a policy point of view, then they do remain financially sustainable and the plans are basically aligned to execute this reform. Igniting growth as well as we continue. So the position there is that the program has been with the IPPs and DMRE and ESCOM partnership with no room for local government to participate. And basically we welcome the fact that we are at a juncture where local government can actually participate as much as we're still finalizing the issues around the executive authority, basically in this particular regard as a sector. And then of course on the water sector as well, which is another challenging area, we definitely welcome the establishment of the National Water Resource Infrastructure Agency that will be responsible for improving the management of bulk water resources. So the pronouncement is certainly welcomed. So as I've indicated, Chair Salta, we acknowledge the very tough economic conditions that we basically find ourselves in as a country. We support the government around the fiscal consolidation approach. And as well as, I mean, we know the increase on social spending to minimize the impact of COVID-19 on households is also well received. So in terms of the macroeconomic and concluding that I think we can all agree that the COVID-19 has just worsened the prevailing economic situation as a country, and will certainly probably linger on for some time. And the real GDP forecast growth of about 5.1% 2021 and household consumption has improved, but pretty much you can see in the outer years, it's going back to pre-pandemic periods around 2% or even lower. And of course, in supporting government's commitment to support vulnerable households, particularly given impact of COVID-19, additional resources for social protection were considered. And this will improve by February 2022. So on that note, Chair, thank you, Salga. We support this division of revenue bill, and we've been very much part of the process and made our inputs basically throughout the process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Komoto. I'm not sure if Mr. Baloyi, you want to make an addition, or from your team, you want to say something on the presentation before we give Kosatu.
Thank you, Chair. I think from our side, the presentation sufficiently covers our position as Salga, Chair. Thank you.
You see, the reason I'm glowing, you always bring positive. You used to bring depressing news. Now that you're Mister, you bring positive presentation that are giving hope. Thank you very much, Team Salga. Comrade Matthew?
Hi, good morning, Comrade Chair. Yes, thank you.
Sorry to disturb, Chair. Does that mean we can recuse ourselves, or what does it mean, Chair?
No, I will request that you wait after this presentation so that we can give members to engage with your presentation.
Okay, thank you so much, Chair.
Thank you. Comrade Matthew, will you flag yourself flag your presentation on your own, or do you need help?
No, I can do it, Comrade Chair. So I've learned to evolve slightly with technology in this pandemic. I think, Comrade Chair, let me just get right into it. And let me thank Comrade Chair and members for giving us time as COSATU to just share our views on the Division of Revenue Bill. I think there are many positive parts to it, but of course there are also some areas of concern too. Chair, I think for us, the number one issue is starting vantage point is COSATU is the economic and fiscal context. One is that we are in the deepest recession in a century. We have an economy that is badly in need of every source of stimuli. We also have an unemployment rate of 44% and rising. We equally have 27 million people who are dependent upon the state for social grants and relief. We've seen thousands of companies closing and retrenching. We also have seen the fiscus bleeding billions to corruption, wasteful expenditure, to tax evasion, to bail out mismanaged SOEs and dysfunctional municipalities. And of course, we have many municipalities which are hanging by a thread and an unreliable source of energy. We do agree with government that our debt trajectory is approaching dangerous levels. And I think, of course, we must make the point that workers are also exhausted by the state of affairs. Chair, I think just on a macro approach, we do feel, well, we do have some disagreements around Treasury's approach to the entire kind of budget. We feel the budget is silent on the need for a mass stimulus plan. It is more focused on budget cuts through wage bill freeze and across the board departmental cuts. I think there is a danger of simply taking one approach only, which is of an austerity approach at all costs versus plugging the holes in the state and also stimulating the economy. So we would hope in February, really to see a budget in February, which would include a mass stimulus program to kickstart the economy, in particular key growth sectors, and that would include funding from DFIs in the private sector. I think there's another mic on commentator. So, Komichi, I think just to kind of get to the key parts of the Division of Revenue Amendment Bill, I think the one key thrust is around the public service wage, but a lot of the allocations is based upon the adjustment or the agreement. So I think we do welcome that. And I think we also want to say as Labour that we're not blind to the real fiscal crisis facing the state. We would also hope the state will be not blind to the real fiscal crisis facing workers, including public servants. And just to make state the point that the 2021 wage agreement is the lowest in many, many years, is significantly below inflation, and significant parts of it are once-off contributions or gratuity payments to public servants. So it is also a gesture by public servants as well, and the unions who sold the deal to assist the state as well. So we also want to say around the public service wage bill, because it is a key part of DORA bill, some proposals we think can help workers and can help the state, because we cannot afford as Labour to see a state which goes bankrupt, which doesn't pay its workers like you see in municipalities, which collapses like you see in SOEs, or retrenches like you see in SOEs. So I think one is to simply respect collective bargaining and to engage with bargaining councils on matters affecting workers, including the wage bill, on agreements. I think if you do that, you will find the goodwill being built, and that creates an environment for win-win compromises, which address each other's fundamental concerns. We think there's also a need, and I think Treasury is warming up to the idea, of having a single collective bargaining regime and wage regime for the entire state, which will include the SOEs, the entities, et cetera, because currently the PSWC only covers 2/3 of the state. And you don't have, for example, wage caps for senior managers in the SOEs and entities. You have some of these chaps earning more than the president, for example, in the SOEs. You have managers at SABC, for example, earning more than the president. We think there's also a need to share to sell politically for compromises for a 25% package cut of what we pay executive office bearers, so members of cabinet, provincial cabinet, et cetera, but also senior executive management across the state and the SOEs and entities. We need to really slash the ministerial handbook's perks. But I think we also need to reverse the headcount cuts for the police, for teachers, et cetera, which harm public service delivery. So I think the other critical part or pillar to the Division of Revenue Bill is really on the Presidential Employment Stimulus Program. We want to say as COSATU too, we really welcome this initiative by government, by the presidency. So we've supported the 11 billion rand given to it to date, which has helped to create over 550,000 jobs. It's giving young people some salaries, experience, et cetera. But I think we also want to appreciate in the MTF that is now being doubled to 74 billion rand over the 3-year period. We think it should actually be expanded further as well in February. Just go to some of the key parts of DORA. I think on basic education, we are worried about the impact of cuts to basic education, which has basically got a below inflation increase over the MTF period. But I think we do want to welcome in DORA some adjusted allocations, so the 113 million rand given to school infrastructure, for sanitation, for water, especially, you know, the amounts indicated here for 132 million for the Eastern Cape, and smaller amounts for the Free State, KZN and Limpopo. But I think, Chair, we must raise concerns around the inability to allocate about 149 million rand under this infrastructure grant when we have thousands of schools which still lack adequate sanitation. We are concerned around the shifting of 97 million rand from the sanitation grant to maths teachers, which is great for maths teachers. We need that. But it does indicate a real management capacity problem in the department. We're not able to spend the money around sanitation. And I think that's borne out when you see that 80% of the 1,000 school sanitation target this year is not being met by the department. And we've been continuously postponing this thing for the last 20 years. So we think there is a need for Parliament to hold the minister and the DG accountable in that regard. Chair, we do want to welcome, and SATU, our teachers union in particular, is very enthusiastic about this, the allocation of 6 billion rand for the employment of more than 310,000 teaching assistants. This is a huge boost to learning, and again, giving young people experience. Chair, I think we do want to propose that a clear plan must be tabled by DBE at Parliament to ensure all schools have access to decent water sanitation by the end of 2022. It can't be that in a country which can manage a World Cup, which can run a nuclear power station, that we can't deliver toilets to schools in rural areas. Chair, on the health front, we are worried about the cuts to the department over the three-year period by about 0.6%. But having said that, we do want to welcome some adjustments made for the community health outreach program, which is about 40 million for mental health, 127 million rand for ecology. We do also specifically want to welcome the 243 million rand given to medical interns for the employment. That's really going to assist in reinforcing healthcare. We also want to really appreciate the 350 million rand given for the COVID-19 vaccine rollout for the employment of nurses and hospitals and also staff on that vaccine program. And they've really done fantastic work. Chair, but we are a bit worried, and we appreciate government has to move funds around to cover holes. And of course, that you can't just simply allocate money if it's not going to be spent. But we are worried about the cut of 560 million rand to the NHI's health facility revitalization program. And there's some significant cuts there, especially in Limpopo of 180 million rand and lesser amounts in other provinces. And I think, sure, we would all know the conditions of our public healthcare institutions infrastructure leaves much to be desired. Chair, we feel this does undermine the Department of Health's efforts to protect workers in the most deadly pandemic in living memory. And we think this needs to be reconsidered and ideally reversed. Of course, it does mean the capacity needs to be developed in the department to make sure that money can be spent, etc. Chair, on the social development, again, we're worried about the 16.9% cut over the MTEF period, which largely comes through the phasing out of the 350 grant in March next year. But Chair, I think we do want to appreciate the allocation of 120 million rand to employ social workers, 178 million rand for early childhood development grants, which has seen the employment of 70,000 ECD workers. So we do want to propose, and we are engaging government around extending the 350 grant beyond March next year to see how can it be made permanent, how can it be increased to the food poverty line, and in essence, to be a basic income grant for those who have got no source of income. We think it is affordable, and we couldn't afford to have 8 million people without any source of income. As we saw in the violence in KZN and Gauteng, that really is a recipe for disaster. Chair, we want to appreciate the allocation of 750 million rand by Treasury for the Neighbourhood Development Partnership Grant. It's seen the employment of over 32,000 people in neighborhood cleaning and greening programs. So this is also another positive intervention. So we think these programs should really be enhanced and extended to see if we can find ways to ensure they are sustainable longer term. Comrade Chair, I think we are all concerned about the state of local government. I think the election results a few weeks ago spoke very clearly about voters' frustrations across party lines. Chair, the AG reports, we all know it, and members would know much better than we would, speak to a very dysfunctional state of municipalities. But we didn't find anything in the MTBS or in the DORA bill, etc., about what are government's plans to fix this thing. We're also quite disappointed, Chair, that the City of Cape Town, I think as the SALGRA colleagues had also mentioned just now, has returned or didn't spend 1.3 billion rand, which is earmarked for the My City service, which again, Chair, when you look at the, when you compare it to the collapse of Metro Rail in Cape Town, it just doesn't make sense. We have entire lines of Metro Rail in Cape Town, which have fallen apart since last year. The city couldn't find space to ensure we spent this 1.3 billion to ease the pressures upon workers getting to work. Chair, also concerning that the 582 million rand allocated to Mfuleni for the Vaal River program is being rolled over. And this has been a matter that's been dragging on for some years. Even the previous Minister of Finance tried to assist in resolving it. But we do want to welcome the allocation of 81 million rand to George for investments in water infrastructure. And I think Chair would really want to see in February clear stabilization, recovery and repositioning plans for these municipalities and a roadmap to move us towards a district development model, because clearly the status quo is collapsing. Comrade Chair, I don't, so that's really the essence of our focus on the DORA bill. The other issues I've highlighted here, Chair, are not in the DORA bill, but I've just included it for members' information's sake around the broader MTVPS issues. I don't think I really need to go into it, because members have been to our submissions on the MTPS as well, but I've just included it, you know, our proposals on economic and social relief to workers, to the economy, what do we think are the good things, what things need to be addressed. I think the good progress that we're making with Treasury around allowing workers who are highly distressed some access to the pension funds, and we're looking forward to seeing that bill come to Parliament in February. And I think we want to appreciate Treasury's responses, positive responses to us in that regard. Chair, I think I've covered the 350 SRD grant. Chair, I think we do kind of really support government infrastructure program. This is going to be a huge catalyst.
Recording to help stopped.
Build local government. And I think we're kind of pleased with our progress also amending Regulation 28 to allow pension funds also to invest in infrastructure that will really be a game changer because of the fiscus itself. Doesn't have the money. Chair, we do think there is a need for us to become much more brutal around tackling corruption.
Recording in progress.
Tackling corruption and wasteful expenditure. And we've made some proposals there about extending the ban on politicians doing business with the state, increasing allocations for the NPA, for SAPs, for the courts, supporting SARS to conduct lifestyle audits and blacklisting delinquent companies from tenders. We are pleased that government is going to table the public reform bill at NEDLAC. We hope at the end of this year, and then it could come to Parliament next year. But we think it really needs to be enhanced to make sure that it can have a single online public procurement system for the entire state. And that can be a key tool to support local procurement, effect cost savings, tackle corruption, et cetera. Chair, we have some proposals on how to further support SARS. And I think we must really appreciate the excellent work SARS is doing. And the good work there must continue, must be reinforced and see how can we support it, especially on customs, lifestyle audits, et cetera. Chair, I don't need to go into SOEs, but just for members' information's sake. And then the appropriations, I can leave it because there is a separate appropriation hearings shortly. So I think in conclusion, Comrade Chair, I mean, a lot of the parts of the DORA bill, we actually do welcome it. The aspects about implementing the wage agreement, albeit a modest one. The significant allocations for the Presidential Employment Program are fantastic. They'll go a long way. Of course, we do have concerns around basic education and health and the inability to spend money, et cetera. But Chair, I think in conclusion, we really hope that government in February will table a budget which would really stimulate the economy and support job creation, provide relief to the unemployed, ramp up the fight against corruption, wasteful expenditure, and also to help rebuild the SOEs in the state, and of course, to respect collective bargaining. I think, Chair, to state the obvious, workers and voters have really lost faith in all of us, in government, in our policies, our commitments. It wasn't just the ANC which lost votes in the elections, all political parties we saw losing support. And the fact that less than half of society, half of the registered voters bothered to vote, and only a quarter of eligible voters voted, should be a wake-up call to all of us that we are simply running out of time and we need to move with much greater speed. So I think, Chair, let me stop there and to thank members for giving us space to share our views. Thanks very much, Comrade Chair.
Thank you, Comrade Matthew. Thank you very much for the presentation. Lubabalo, will you please help me with identifying members who might want to engage with the two presentations? Members, can you please, by show of hand, we have Honorable Ryder. And Honorable Detroit. Honorable Okan.
Honorable Karim.
Honorable Karim.
Honorable Moletani.
Honorable Moletani.
So far in that order, Chair.
Provinces? No one.
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay, Honorable Ryder, you'll be the first one.
Very much, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody.
Just hold on, Honorable Ryder. Lubabalo, you wanted to say Honorable who?
I wanted to say Chairperson, but I saw Honorable Mpesi is on the platform.
Has he raised his hand?
No, I haven't raised my hand. I think Lubabalo wants me to speak, Chair. You want to hear my voice?
I'll come in the end,
Chair.
Okay, you're welcome, Honorable PC. Honorable Ryder.
Thank you, Chairperson, again. And yes, welcome to Chairman Joe from Gauteng, always with us and much appreciated. Chair, thank you. Yes, Selga, appreciate your presentation, and I want to join you in welcoming the increase in the allocation of the national fiscus from 9% to 9.6% over the medium term. I think it's a welcome move. I don't think it's enough, but I do think that it is something that is worth appreciating, the fact that we're starting to move in the right direction rather than continuing where we were or moving in the wrong direction. So, Selga, I'd like to talk a little bit or to ask a little bit more about your position on unfunded mandates and mandate creep, which you didn't really address in your presentation and which I find to be the biggest problem when it comes to local government funding and one of the biggest concerns when I engage with local government. The fact that we have unfunded mandates that are being thrust onto municipalities. And the one in particular that I've picked up or I've been bashing on for a little bit of time is the issue around the protection of land and the knock-on effect that land invasions is causing to local government, where the cost of seeking court orders, the cost of getting people to assist with the implementation of the court orders, in other words, the eviction of people that have moved onto land illegally, and of course, where the locals have been too slow in doing this, there's obviously a need for alternative housing, etc., that has also been thrust down onto local municipalities, and the incredible cost burden that this carries. And I mean, I think that Johannesburg Municipality recently reported its bill. It's outstanding bill to the Red Ants, the famous Red Ants. And it was a staggering amount. And they were quite frank in saying that they couldn't afford to pay that because there just wasn't sufficient budget. So if you can talk a little bit about unfunded mandates, please don't restrict yourself to just that, but give us a few more examples of unfunded mandates that municipalities are struggling with. The other thing that I wanted to get some comment on is that I've noticed that there's been a reasonable degree of ring fencing that's been happening with grant funding and the shift of direct grants becoming more indirect grants. So the centralization of spending. So national government effectively saying, oh, we're giving X amount to local government, but them actually keeping that money and performing the functions on behalf of local government. Is that a good thing or is it a bad thing? Is it working or not? I've noticed that particularly in the RBIG segment, but if you can perhaps talk a little bit about that. Then your slide 20 spoke about insufficient capacity of municipalities to perform their financial obligations. And I want to unpack that a little bit, because this is always the issue where we get scared to add more money into the pot for local government when they are unable or unwilling to report effectively on their spending, and also just to spend the money properly. So, you know, I think the MSCOA project is a very good example where we're seeing that a lot of municipalities implemented it very effectively within deadline, et cetera, et cetera. There remain a number of municipalities that have not implemented MSCOA, and there doesn't appear to be any consequences for those municipalities. So if you can talk a little bit around that, but also speak specifically around the fact that, you know, municipalities receive funding to attract appropriate skills, you know, and there's an organigram, and that organigram is funded in terms of the budget. Why are we sitting in a situation where there's, in your words, insufficient capacity when, you know, the money is being budgeted to fill an organigram and it's being spent as well? That's always the first money that gets spent, is the money on staff salaries. So why are we not seeing municipalities building that capacity even when it's funded? What's the issue? Why are we, you know, I was reading an article last night where it says that the 39% of graduates are looking to build their futures outside of this country. And that's a staggering amount. We've got the graduates coming out of university. We've got people with financial know-how. Why are we not attracting them into municipalities? And then again, you spoke about water very briefly, but, you know, again, municipalities, water losses. So I know that, look, the last official number we got was 38.6% of non-revenue water. But that number is quite old. I think it's dated 2012 out of the last WRC report that was done. Is there an update on that? It might be unfair to put you on the spot and ask you for that number, but I think what are municipalities doing about water losses? Thank you, Selga. That's for you. For Kasatu, yes. Respecting collective bargaining, I suppose that would always be good, but then you need to make sure that that the collective bargaining is done in good faith from all parties concerned, and not done by people trying to achieve incorrect outcomes for the country and tying the whole country into a three-year agreement. But I know that's a policy point. We'll never agree on that, so that's fine. But yeah, I want to agree with you on the issues around the headcount cuts in SEPs and with the teachers, but it must be at the right level that we're saying that those headcount cuts should not happen. I'm all for the headcount cuts at the very top of SEPs. I think that we have a top-heavy structure within SEPs. We've got more generals in SEPs than the entire United States Army, and it just doesn't work. But the boots on the ground is what we want, and the teachers in the classroom. Those are the issues. Yeah, and the fact again that you pointed out, sanitation, 97 million moved away from the Department of Education sanitation project to get into teachers. This is alarming when we have a look year after year after year, the backlog in sanitation, that specific item does not get spent. And then we sit and wonder about pit latrines and bucket systems that are still in operation around the country. It really is not good. In fact, the entire infrastructure spending of the Department of Education needs to be seriously looked at. And I mean, you know, so for example, in Gauteng, we've still got the asbestos schools that we've been supposed to be getting rid of for years and years. And that money is also not being spent. And the asbestos schools still sit and have not been replaced. Yes, and then to Treasury, I want to apologize for my incorrect reading the other day of the movement of monies to oncology and mental health. I had the pluses and minus, and I also want to welcome the fact that we're moving money to oncology and mental health from the NHR. I think that really is a good move. The move to single online procurement, I think, would have the opposite effect, Mr. Parks, from what you're trying to achieve. I think as soon as you go to single online procurement, you're going to be getting rid of a lot of smaller local suppliers, and you're going to be centralizing power, and you are going to be encouraging connected people to be walking away with the majority of the prizes. So unless you can come with a very good model that you can convince us on, I think that trying to centralize that would actually be disastrous for small businesses, and would achieve exactly the opposite of what you're wanting to achieve, and would open the door to big business to dominate this, because they would obviously have the ability to nominate people to spend all day on single online procurement projects, and they'd be able to dominate, and of course use their size manipulate prices, let's say. And then, of course, the big one that Mr. Parks has highlighted, and the fact that we need to get a response from Treasury on, is the e-tolls. It was a little one line, and I don't even think, Matthew, that you mentioned it, but the e-toll issue Minister Mbalula came out on Friday, again, loose cannon, came out with an announcement on Friday telling us what was going to be in the budget in February. Well, that's quite a brave move from his point, from his stance, I guess, but telling us that e-tolls are going to be scrapped, but the Treasury still needs to find a way of getting the funding. I think Treasury needs to comment on that particular item, certainly in the context of the adjustment appropriation now and going forward. Thank you, Chairperson. That's what I have.
Thank you very much, Honourable Ryder. But I'll request members to make their good points without really using the language that might not be acceptable or offensive, to label someone as a loose cannon. It's really not kind. But thank you for your inputs. We really welcome those valuable inputs. Honorable Detoit.
Thank you, Honorable Chen. Honorable Chen, yes, I'm partially covered. I think to Salga, the capacity of municipalities is a great concern. Yes, we've got new councillors that have been elected recently. And I think the challenge that they will be sitting with is the cooperation of employees, municipal employees, to actually do their work. Because we're still sitting with years of cadre deployment, and that's rotting from the inside out in municipalities that may pose a threat to effective service delivery in municipalities all over the country. And the fact that funds are still going to municipalities by means of shares and equitable shares, etc., that needs to be handled in a very correct way to prevent
it's 10 hours
to prevent maladministration from taking place. And then to Kasatu on slide 23, again, as you've done in the past, focusing on increased taxes to the so-called wealthy. And you must please remember that top earning individuals have already been starting to leave the country in huge numbers. And what one must always remember is that a large percentage of them are not just large earners, but also job creators and people that invest in the economy, that keeps the economy afloat. So be very cautious when trading on that arena. And then the 350 Rand grants, it's much needed in South Africa, Che, at this stage, and the poverty will increase in the coming year if things go the way that it is currently going. It is, however, not sustainable. And Kusatu threatening us basically with a repeat of social unrest that happened in July 2021, I think that's unnecessary. We all know it was politically motivated and not out of hunger and poverty. So I think that's opportunistic way to approach this situation. And then a question one have is if the Neighborhoods Development Partnership grants to the tune of 751 million rand will yield the results that one wants, and that the taxpayers will get value for the money that's spent. As when this takes hands with the 11 billion Presidential Employment Stimulus Program, that's estimated to create more than 550 temporary jobs and an increase of billions over the MTEF. Yes, it's permanent jobs that is being created. People are supposed to get skills, but is there someone that will be monitoring this? Will we get the results afterwards once this project has lapsed? We'll just have to wait and see. Thank you, Chair. That's all from me.
Thank you, Honorable Detroit. Honorable Okam.
Good morning, Jay. Good morning, colleagues. Thank you for the opportunity. Firstly, Honorable Chair, to Salga, I think one of the biggest challenges over the country, there has been a huge number of newly elected councillors, people that has never served on a council and that does not know exactly how the ins and outs they work with regards to finances. We wish them all of the best when it comes to assisting these new councillors as well as former councillors to fulfill their duties. I think, however, that this also comes with a huge risk in the sense that there are now a lot of new councillors that all of a sudden will be exposed to the whole issue of tenderpreneurs and people that will be targeted, people that will be targeted for the fact that he or she is now a councillor and might have an influence. So I would like to find out what Salga is proposing with regards to preventing these councillors from being exposed or from assisting them in to know how to handle it when they will be exposed to the lucrative offers of corruption that might be coming their way. The second thing that I want to ask for, Salga, is that we know that the one big problem that we've got in our municipalities is the total lack of consequence management. And I know that we have discussed consequence management over and over again, not only this year, every year, and even way years back. We discuss consequence management, but nothing happens when it comes to the management of people that did not do their jobs and to consequences that must be implemented on them. What does Salga propose must be put on the table in order to improve consequence management so that people out there can see that you must stay within the lines, that you must stay within your authorities and do what you're supposed to do, and that there will be consequences if you do not do that. I really am of the opinion that we will never truly have proper financial management at a municipal level if we do not start to implement for once and for all a proper plan with regards to consequence management. And not only consequence management, but also line management. A person that must be appointed in a certain position because he's got the skills to do that. Once you've got the skills to be an engineer or an electrician or whatever the case might be, you will also have the skills to manage the people that are supposed to work for you, and you will be better equipped to know what they must give to you. Honorable Chairperson, I've been recovered with most of the other questions with regards to Salga. The other last question for Salga that I want to ask is the whole issue of financial management and ring fencing. We have seen in the past that a huge amount of municipalities get money in, let's say, for an example, for electricity. But they don't use it to pay ESCOM. They use it to pay wages, and they use it to hold functions and to pay other projects that has been overspended by. What is Salga's opinion when it comes to ring-fencing certain amounts for that it has been paid for? Let's say electricity. If a person pays electricity, that must be ring-fenced to go towards ESCOM or to go towards the infrastructure of electricity, and not use it for total other expenditures, because that obviously is one of the reasons why we have seen that electricity bills towards Eskom has skyrocketed. It's just because they have not paid Eskom, but they have received the money. So maybe look at ring fencing of that again. And again, that is a topic that has been, we have talked about it a lot in the past. With regards to COSATU, I think the whole question of consequence management, COSATU is also addressing that. And as well as, and I agree with that, there must be a ban on government officials, ministers, mayors, their families to do business with the state. It really is just a matter of you are tempting those people. I think there must be a ban on that, and we must in any way look very carefully on that. The other thing that I want to ask is, what is the opinion with regards to a lifestyle audit of all senior members of government, of all members of parliament, of all executive mayors and mayors in municipalities, of all municipal managers, in order to show to them that you will get audited, there will be a forensic audit done on your lifestyle, and if you are out of the lines, we will pick it up and we will ask you where that money come from, where you bought your brand new Range Rover or whatever the case might be. So yeah, lifestyle audits. And then the last question to COSATU is again that I believe that our public wage bill and the amount of people that we've got working for government on the various levels, municipal, provincial and national, are way, way too much. It's totally bloated. We will not be able to carry on paying all these people over the next few years. Isn't it, and do they agree, that it is not the job of government, whichever level, to be the main service provider when it comes to giving jobs, but that it is government's job to create an environment that is conducive for economic growth, that attracts investments, and that it is therefore a capacitating thing that government must do for the private sector in order that the private sector can create the jobs, because that is where the jobs are. We must capacitate the private sector to make it easier for them to grow and to create the jobs, and not government. It does not help government to say that we're going to give X, Y, and Z thousands of jobs just to keep the people on the ground happy, because it is not sustainable. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. That's it from my side.
Thank you, Honorable Okom. Honorable Eunice, Karen.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I'm very struck by how reasonable COSATU's proposals are. I mean, except for the issue of the public sector wage bill, I can't think there's much to quibble about. I mean, for example, they ask about water and sanitation in schools, right? I mean, like it's 27 years later, Chairperson. I mean, what can really justify 27 years later, that schools do not have water and sanitation? It's just not acceptable. It doesn't matter which party you come from and which party is in government. The fact is, it's unacceptable, Chairperson. Obviously, we appreciate it's not just a state failure. I have, I think, in this committee or perhaps another committee, raised my own experiences in my own constituency, Alfred Duma Municipality, a high school. I don't want to mention their name, because the last time I mentioned their name, one of the teachers was upset. He said, we're not the only one. So let's not mention their name. You know, in 1996, Pierre Cronier and I, he was then the MP working intermittently in that area with me and Nati in Shleko. I think Nati might have been there too. We went to the school. They told us they want a fence and they want the toilet to taken aback that the children are having to, you know, respond to the call of nature in a field nearby. And teachers were using, as often happens, the toilets of the residents living across the road. So we got it sorted out after a lot of pressure, but it happened fairly swiftly. The department responded, and within a few months they got going, and I think within 9 months the toilets were up and the fence was up. 2 years later we went back there, and guess what? The fence didn't last for more than a few weeks. It was ripped off and stolen. And people even took the toilet pan and so on, right? And the toilet was unfunctional or dysfunctional because DPW hadn't come to fix it and so on. But when we went there, we despaired. So this time we got a combination of private sector and public sector investment. We even had a meeting with the school governing body and said, well, you know, we need as a SGB here to make people aware that they're doing this to the school, which their children use. You're not going to believe it, Chairperson. But 4 or 5 years later, we are going to believe it, knowing where we are and where we've come. We go back there. And guess what? We're back to square one. This time I refused. I said, no, you must take responsibility. There's also a school in Ukashlamba we're fighting for. At least then I was on my own. I'm fighting for. The other two MPs have been deployed elsewhere. Anyway, so what I'm saying is, I know it's not the state's responsibility, but tell me, on the whole, yes. You can't tell me every toilet gets ripped off by, you know, criminals, please. So there's no excuse for that. Now, this is about having a single bargaining council for everybody, including state-owned entities and public entities, employers. Very interesting. I just wanted to ask Matthew, I mean, do the workers and the unions in the SOEs and broader public, and well, probably now in many of them, not all obviously, do they accept it? Because they're able to strike a better deal outside of the normal public sector bargaining chamber. Excuse me. Then on the NHI, I mean, really, you know what we're going to say, right? If anything, the July unrest, the COVID-19 upsurge and what's going on right now reinforces the need to invest more in the health sector. And NHI is tottering. We need to, incrementally move towards it in a significant way. And then on the SRD, we've already taken position. So what I understand, we're not going to change that. And the finance committee already in the fiscal framework last week, which you voted for, Chairperson, and others you voted for, is very clear what it suggests. The appropriation committee might consider on this matter a renewal of that. Then on the matter of was Dennis being facetious or teasing, or was he serious when he said there are more generals in the SAPS than the entire US Army? When the civil society stakeholders responded, I am interested in his reply. And finally, Chairperson, I would like you to consult with Lubabalo and Estelle and the Legal Services Unit. Is it appropriate for Simon Moletsane, who's one third my age, to speak after me, a traditional leader in this parliament? No, I'm not a dinosaur, Chairperson. I'm a traditional leader, right? So I don't think it's appropriate that anybody speaks after me. I would like you to get legal opinion before I take it to court. And finally, I would like Dennis Ryder to phone me offline, you see, and explain to me how is it that he gets the light so well on his face that on the screen he looks half his age. How does he temper and tamper with the screen? Because, you know, I need it more than he does, especially with my gray hair and my balding head. Thank you very much. Dennis, offline, please.
I'm just imagining how will a meeting without you be. It will be a depressing meeting.
Much quicker, I assure you.
We're happy we have you to make us smile and laugh and, you know, feel free. And that was on a lighter note. You are next.
Thank you, Chair. I must invite Honorable Karim to free state so that he must know that I'm a chief of the Batahoom. He will only get that information if he can visit free state. Thank you, Chair. To my question, I will start with COSATU. COSATU, as you welcome the allocation of 6 billion for the employment of more than 310,000 teaching assistants. As a federation of workers, what is in place to monitor so that you make sure that the budget will be used for what is meant for? Secondly, to COSATU, I just want to find out from them, what are they doing to protect the ECD educators so that they can be treated like other workers in terms of benefits such as salary wage, medical aid, maternity leave, and the 13th check. Lastly, Chair, to SALGA. I just want to find out from SALGA whether do they still believe in the distribution model for allocation of funds to the three spheres of government? Does it still give you, as a local government, what you deserve, looking at your responsibilities? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mletsani. Before I go for a second bite, let's check if members...
You said I will speak, Chair.
Are you requesting to speak, Honorable...
I thought I said so, Chair.
Okay, you can speak.
No, Chair, thanks very much. Just...
Sorry, Chair. My apologies, Honorable Mletsani. There's also Honorable Randan, Chair.
Brother again.
Randan, Chair.
Randall, okay.
From Gauteng.
Okay. So the Gauteng is there. Oh, okay. I can see. Honorable PC.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. And greetings to colleagues. And thanks for the opportunity to respond and to participate on the presentations given. I must say that on a lighter note, that Gauteng is forever here. I wonder where the other provinces who are not here to participate in this very important meeting that you always invite on. I think it will be proper that you take it up with the different provinces, Chair, the legislatures, to make sure that their representatives, particularly their chairpersons, to participate in this particular important meeting. Chair, let me start with COSATU. I think I want to say that I'm covered. Some of the recommendations are long-standing recommendations. You know that you and I, Chair, are the product of COSATU. And I think the COSATU presentation still represents the thinking of the left within the trade union movement to make sure that it vanguards the interest of the working class, particularly the poorest of the poor in our country. And I think we must welcome the recommendations and the suggestions that were presented on the issues of a teacher assistant. And I think it's very important, Chair, to note government has employed many assistant educators in the country. Here in Gauteng, of which I'm a member of the Education Portfolio Committee as well, we do have a lot of them and they are still working. And the only thing that you need to look at is to upgrade the basic conditions of their employment. And I think if COSATU could, through its unions, could engage government around that particular issue. And then again, the other issue, Chair, is the vacant funded posts that are agreed upon. I think I was dealing with, we had what you call GPG-wide in Gauteng last week, where we had discussions with different departments, and you realize that there is this thinking that you must keep the wage bill at a particular level, and yet you find that the posts that have been approved in the organogram of the departments, you find that departments, they have about plus minus 10% of those vacant funded posts unfilled by various departments. And I think COSATU must take that. And I want to hear the COSATU comrades to tell us as to what is it that they're going to do. Because it's very important that COSATU put pressure on government and ourselves as well as the portfolio committee. We must definitely put pressure that vacant funded posts should be filled. In as much as we know that government is not an employer only in the country, I think the vacant funded posts which are approved should be filled so that people can then get employment. We know our economic situation at the moment in the country may not allow many companies to employ people out there, but I think we must look at ways and means of getting our people in the government employment. Chair, I think on the issues of schools, that maybe going to this issue that still number of, as Member Ryder was saying, that there are a number of schools that are still in asbestos in Gauteng. In fact, Gauteng has done far better than any other province, Chair. In the last administration, I was chairing the Education Portfolio Committee. And I can tell you, Chair, without any shadow of a doubt, we had about 36 asbestos schools. And today, as we speak in Gauteng, we have less than 10 schools that are often asbestos. Unfortunately, due to COVID, I think there's a delay that those schools were not built on time. But I can tell you, Chair, that there is a program that is actually addressing that particular issue. And the assurance we got last week is that one, because I'm very passionate about getting rid of these particular schools because they're not good for our children and for the communities. Chair, the last thing that I also need to raise, I think and as much as the opposition members in your committee are raising issues, perhaps also using a foul language against some ministers or some members of parliament, I think we should also look at ourselves first, because if we were to respond to what Member Ryder was saying, that the minister is a loose cannon, we can equally point many from the DA that are loose cannon, including their leader. So it's something that we need to look at very, very serious when we say things like this in these platforms are not actually building the cohesion amongst ourselves. We may be coming from different political parties, but I think the level of respect that we should give each other, it's important, so that we don't undermine each other, because we're in this platform and we're protected by law that no one is going to take us to task. I think it starts at home. There's always a saying in African language, Chair, that if a child behaves in a particular way outside, it means that at home it's worse. So I don't want us to do that. I want us to assist one another in making sure that we respect the decorum of the committee as well as our dignity as individuals. Because the more you say something negative about others, some of us look at you to say, indeed, you are very negative. And it means you represent a particular class in society. And I think it's not right. It's something that we must refrain from doing. Because there's a better language to use than to use words that are not going to assist us. On SALGA, Chair, the issue of municipalities not spending the grant that is given to them. What is SALGA going to do? Because in most cases, we have seen the money that is meant for something else has been redirected by various municipalities to deliver a particular program. And I think it's something that we need to look at. Again, there are issues that are locally based, which are municipal-based service delivery matters. We have seen in the last financial year that we had challenges of water, we had challenges of electricity, we had challenges of roads. What is SALGA doing in monitoring and evaluating the work done by various municipalities? Because you look at the municipalities that are not delivering those services, currently they are in trouble. People refuse to pay for services because the municipality is not actually rendering the service they require. I know that every year, beginning of the year after the budget speech, Chair, we always influence, even before the budget is tabled, influence that the grant should be actually be given to our municipalities. And I think it's something that we should encourage, but we also want to hear SALGA. How are they monitoring the implementation of the resources that are given to all municipalities? Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mpisi. I think the point that you've raised of attendance by honorable members of the portfolio committees from provinces is a matter that we have also raised as a committee. And last week, we even tried to do a roll call to check which province is not represented, because we want the views and the recommendations of provinces. And we also want to give, even though tomorrow we will be at the provinces to make to seek mandate, we'll still want provinces to be part of these meetings at this stage, to be part of listening to the presentation, given the opportunity also to engage on public hearings, on presentations from different stakeholders, which are very important. And what they are saying might have an influence on what decisions or recommendations is the committee going to take, or what the budget by Treasury in February might be. So we are trying by all means to get the provinces to be involved. On the other matter, I think I've tried to address it, and all the time I'm trying to make sure that we need to be seen as a committee, as a team, and not try to step on each other's toes. Sometimes these things are said on a lighter note, but sometimes they're said provocatively. So we are discouraging that. We have been doing that, trying to engage ourselves to work as a team, as a committee. I don't know, I see a hand of Honorable Ryder, but I don't want to encourage a dialogue between myself.
Chairperson, if you're prepared to have a go at me, then I think there's a chance for me to respond, if I may, and then you can close it. I'll leave it at that. But Chair, frankly, I think that a minister going on record in the newspaper 3 months before a budget speech pressuring
Honorable Ryder, just hold on a minute. I'm trying to summarize all your views, and I've got all the rights to comment on what you have said. And I don't really encourage the behavior that I'm seeing now can try to test me and try to challenge me on the platform. You have said what you have said, and as a chairperson, if I feel that I need to comment on what you have said, I need to be given the opportunity to do so. I'm just doing my responsibility as the chair. Thank you very much. I'm sorry about that delay, Honorable Randall. The time is yours now, and after you, we are going to request the members of SALGA to respond. Honorable Randall?
Yeah, Thank you so much, Honorable Mashlangu, for the opportunity, and thank you for always inviting us, and we really try and attend, you know, as much of these meetings as possible. So yes, I'm a member together with Member MPC and the Gauteng Provincial Government. So I've got four comments. The first one, and Member Honorable Ryder spoke about local government and the illegal invasion of land, but Chairperson, in Tshwane, for example, what we've seen recently is that private owners, due to the downturn of the economy, unemployment, etc., and who does have small holdings, starts to sell stands without any township development in place. That puts an additional burden on the metros and the municipalities with regards to removing illegal connections, etc., and really revenue foregone. I think we also need to, you know, have a look at that. Although we have a blanket court order in the city of Tshwane to prevent the illegal occupation of city of Tshwane property, there's no recourse in terms of private owners selling stands illegally, and that's really a financial burden at this stage, and it's growing. Honourable Chair, then in terms of a member, Okam spoke about the lack of consequence management. Now, as a member of SCOPA, also in Gauteng, at the moment, we are busy analysing the annual reports together with the Auditor General. And what we've picked up is that officials just simply resign, or they're being redeployed without, you know, having any chance for the government to recover any funds lost. For this past financial year, we had 56 cases of financial misconduct. And the chances of recovering those monies are more or less zero. I think that's a critical issue that SALGA need to assist us with, not only in terms of local government, but also in provincial government. Honourable Chair, then the third point that I wanted to make is in with regards to the underperformance of grants. And I think my colleague in Gauteng, my chairperson PC, spoke about this. Now, this might be a double whammy. National Treasury might have been borrowing money at an interest rate to be able to provide a conditional grant to the province. Yet my departments are underspending. So, you know, it's not only bad for us to return the money, but then that might have been money that was borrowed and we're paying you. We've already seen the debt service cost that has been spiraling out of control. And then lastly, Chair, and this is close to my heart because I'm also a member of Gauteng's e-government portfolio. Now, in this budget and in this NTBPS, I've not seen anything that speaks to the fourth industrial revolution. I've had a call yesterday of a whistleblower telling me to investigate a printing tender in the city of Ekurhuleni, where they printed a little booklet for employees to the cost of 1.9 million. Those booklets have been lying in a room somewhere. Can't it be an online link that if an employer needs something, he can just click? And the link is there. We could have saved a lot of money. So, Chair, I think going forward, we really and seriously need to reconsider the way that we spend money in terms of having it in line with the fourth industrial revolution and making use of new technology, creating jobs where there were not jobs like yesterday, big data analysts, cybersecurity specialists, and the list continues. But Chair, thank you once again for allowing me this opportunity. I really appreciate.
Thank you very much, Honorable Randall. SALGA, I don't know if it is you or Askumuto to respond, or the whole team, you'll assist each other in responding to the questions that are relevant to you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. We'll definitely respond to the questions of the team. I'm going to start with the easy ones first, and then I'll leave the much more difficult ones to the colleagues who will follow. Chair, the first question from Honorable Ryder is with respect to the unfunded mandate and what the SALGA's position. I think our position, Chair, has not changed. In effect, that we decry the issue of unfunded mandates and the consequence effect on the fiscals of local municipalities, because they also put an extra burden and strain on the fiscals of municipalities, and in the main, over and above those that were mentioned by MP Ryder, these also include things like healthcare, museums, libraries, and even Rhodes as well. I'm sure in his previous lifetime, Honorable Ryder will remember the frustration we had with the roles that are provincial competence and at times forcing municipalities to step in as the lack of response was ongoing from the respective provincial governments at that point. The issue of the insufficient financial capacity in finance departments and municipalities is a grave concern for us. And this has also been highlighted and flagged by the Auditor General, where they also made the startling fact to us that the statement that informed us to the point that close to R1 billion was used on getting extra pair of hands from service providers insofar as preparation of financial statements. And from those amounts used, large portion of that extra of those financial statements also had material misstatements, which says to you, even the money that were used for getting an outsourced service from service providers was not even worth the paper that it was paid for. But then there's a deeper question perhaps that we must also ask and not be afraid to ask. The question is, what is the role of leadership in these appointments? Because as you rightly say, vacancies are filled, there's a budget, and someone is drawing a salary. So what is the role of leadership in those specific municipalities? And as SAUDO have been quite clear that people, the executives of those municipalities, either the municipal manager or the mayor, must insist on ensuring that people who are suitably qualified for those positions are the ones who are ultimately appointed. Because it does not make any sense to have a finance department and to have annual financial reporting department that is filled with warm bodies, but the function is outsourced to an external service provider to do the primary work of just bookkeeping and recording of what happens in terms of all the financial transactions in the municipality. So for us, Chair, that's why we also make the point of insufficient financial capacity in those municipalities through warm bodies, but also raise the fact that it's much more complex. And I also think it touches on leadership capacity or capability in those municipalities, also insisting that the work that needs to happen must happen. Chair, the other question, I'm skipping the others from Councillor Ryder. I know my colleagues will respond. In fact, the one about water losses, we do have a number of training courses and partnerships with various institutions and various other governments as well with respect to the issue of water and electricity, and also looking at very innovative ways of dealing with the water losses, electricity losses, which we link municipalities to, and through the electricity working group that I've been a chairperson of, we've actually linked quite a number of municipalities to innovative ways of doing new things and piloting new ways of doing things in the municipalities. We can bring all of this value to members, but whether members actually take it and try and implement where they are is a different question, and whether ultimately they're able to get the success that should come out of it is also a very different question. Honorable Detoit asked a question about the cooperation between municipal employees and new executives. We believe that as part of a professionalizing of public service, it should be common cause that whoever has taken executive position or the new political leadership, the professional administration should not be behaving in a particular way, because they understand that their work is to work for government, and whoever is there must not change what they do. And so forth. So we believe that we, within our stable democracy, we've seen a transition of peaceful municipalities in various areas, and the administration has supported them and continued. And we hope that continues. The NDPG grant, we're hopeful of its impact, but ultimately, once the grant has been apportioned to appropriated rather to the relevant municipalities, it must be a successful spending of those grants to derive the type of value we need and the impact we need on in the lives of our communities. And how can we monitor this much more closely? I think that the over and above the current legal mechanisms that are there in place, we also need to accept that we require a different approach for local government or government broadly to monitor our CAPEX expenditure. And I really think that the NPs such as yourself must really appreciate as a starting fact that the situation at local government or government broadly, insofar as the CAPEX expenditure and our procurement is in dire state. and it requires a different type of approach and out of the ordinary to be to ensure that we track the money, ensure that every cent paid, we derive the type of value that we need and it gets to where it should get to without people doing the various things in the value chain of spending. Honorable Okamp asked a very important question about the number of newly elected councillors and what is SALDA doing to ensure that they avoid the pitfalls that are there and avoiding being captured or doing specific or different things that they should not be doing in the lack of experience. I think we must go probably one step back and ask the question, how does SALDA get members, in this case, new councillors? So new councillors essentially come from political party as initially people who are proposed as candidates for the public to vote for. And I think in various different parties, there has to be a deep appreciation about institutional capacity, institutional memory, and ensuring that you retain a level of experience and avoid having new people, because all of these newly elected public representatives come from political parties. So we must really appeal to all political parties present here to mention in your various meetings that you have with your organization and comrades that this is an important consideration and it doesn't actually bode well for the sector to refresh at such a rate and not retain a level of institutional memory and experience in the sector. And SALDA, obviously, as common course, when there's a new term, we do run a number of trainings that's done by SALDA. I know the Department of Cooperative Governance will also be doing a training in partnership with us as well. And there's various legs of the training. And I know that we're also looking at deeply the issue of ethics. And I know that various the provincial governments have concluded agreements with the Ethics Institute of South Africa, which is also dealing at quite a substantive level insofar as the ethics component. The issue of consequence management, what does SALDA do and propose? I mean, at our NEC meeting, we took a resolution where we felt that we needed to extract a higher level of accountability from our executives insofar as the negative performance, the issue of not concluding the financial statements in time for the Auditor General to do what they need to do, the fruitless, irregular and wasteful expenditure. And we were demanding really a greater level of accountability from our members and asking them what they've done about these transgressions reported in their municipalities. And I can report sadly on this platform that not much of our municipalities wrote to actually respond or even acknowledge communication from SALDA to them about this. And part of this is the belief that SALDA doesn't have any statutory or legal responsibility to be able to extract any accountability or enforce any consequence management because we do not have the powers. So we are really calling on those who have the powers to ensure that they extract that accountability to ensure that things happen in local municipality, because in as much as SALDA represents the association, we are not the executive in those municipalities directly ourselves. So the legal burden and the statutory burden and the fiduciary burden still lies on those executives in those municipalities to be able to do so. But our position on consequence management and extraction of accountability is very clear, because this does not bode well for the sector and we really need to deal with those who are doing nefarious things in our sector. Then the question about financial management and whether we support ring fencing when you pay firstly your two bills, your water and electricity bill. I think that actually may not be the question if you look at the environment or trading environment properly. Because essentially what you are saying, you're not fixing the problem. You may pay rent, water and ESCOM first, but there's still those who are municipal service providers who are working on our water infrastructure, our electricity infrastructure, and that may affect the ability for us to deliver that clean water or reliable electricity in those infrastructures that they are maintaining. So actually the question is local government actually able to raise its revenue source? If you are raising adequate revenue, you are then able to pay your expenses that are linked to your delivery of the services. And I think the question is local government is really struggling across the board. Firstly, when we speak about all of this unemployment and the economy contracting, we must have an appreciation that on the ground in local government, that's where you find the direct expression of unemployment growing and lack of jobs in that area. So the fact that our people are finding our rates, our municipal rates, unaffordable, the fact that many of them are unable to pay their municipal rates. And yet, in the two trading services which you're mentioning the most, the electricity one and the water one, that's where our people expect services, whether they are working or not working. And that's where there's a connoisseur view of perception that these are free basic services, and yet someone pays for them. And these services are ones which you can't disconnect easily, whether people are unemployed or not at all. And also citing the fact that we're from a COVID financial year, where initially in the first part of the financial year, we had to cease doing our debt collection. And now you have to actually start moving away from that and starting collecting and that and reprogramming your community insofar as the intention or the decisiveness of the municipality to be able to collect your outstanding revenue from those municipalities. So I don't think it is necessarily an issue about ring fencing, but it's an issue about is local government able to attract and collect its revenue sources from the community. Honourable Moletsane, do you still believe in the distribution model? I think we, as Councillor Honourable Ryder mentioned earlier on, it's an improvement for SALGA. Is it ideal as we prefer it? No. We're still fighting for a larger share in the fiscus because of these factors I've also mentioned in the first question about our ability to collect revenue. And also remembering that all of these assumptions that informed the appropriations, actually they're based on the white paper of local government, which has not been reviewed after all these years. And we've had now some time to be able to live and experience the assumptions and be able to test them properly if the assumptions made in the white paper are actually correct. And I think with lived experience, we can better inform what the future reality becomes. The issue of raised by Honorable BC with lack of spending of grants, SALGA does, but unfortunately it's at the end of quarter, follow up with the performance of institution against key performance areas. And then from there, we note the where there's a good performance or there's lack of performance. And generally what you find is issues along issues of grant performance is poor planning and issues of procurement issues that arise from there. And also after procurement issues, you have the issues with the community and the labor forums and various other forums which demand a 30%. And if the contractor is unwilling to give that, then there's stoppages and frustrating the successful delivery of that. So it may be issues along that, but we also, through our annual performance plan, have structured engagements and assist municipalities to overcome specific challenges they may have in the value chain of procurement, in the value chain of delivery of projects that can assist all of these challenges. But often whether there's value or you can see value out of it, and the success is also a separate question. Can SALGA evaluate delivery of successful services? I don't think to an extent we can. But I really think, and the point here is, there's two MECs that I don't think we're holding to account enough. There's the MEC of cooperative government and the MEC of treasury in all provinces, because the same questions being asked and expected of SALGA to do this and to do that is actually not what the law empowers SALGA to do. But rather, though, the questions that have been asked about what we're doing about local government directly in as far as lack of grant spending and consequence management and various other things are two questions that two MECs are directly responsible for, where legally there's a report that must go to them every month, every quarter, Section 72 report, 52D report, 71 report must go to them, and they're not asked enough. So at the point you find that a financial year has passed and there's been insufficient spending on a grant, the question is never asked on an MEC who by law received a monthly report and a quarterly report, what have you done, which empowers them to be able to do something about that. But as a member organization, an association for local government, there's more burden put on us, which is at times a bit outside of our mandate because the law does not empower us to directly intervene in a business of a specific municipality where there's issues about lack of leadership, lack of performance, but we can advise and be on the side, but we don't have the powers to be able to do that. And I think the two MECs are getting away with men and are complicit to some of these municipalities when there's issues of performance that arise from there. So directly, SALGA is not able to evaluate the successful delivery of services, but we can monitor through the annual, the IDPs of the municipality, the budget spend of the municipality, but we do so within the limitations that we may have. Then, Honorable Randall, issue of land invasion is something that is of concern to us, and also the differentiated response from different municipalities also is also of a concern. You see some municipalities dealing with it quite proactively, and others having a challenge to do so. And you're seeing that is also affecting the delivery of services and the financial situation of those municipalities. So I really think there has to be a better way of looking at it and working with all three spheres of government to be able to prevent these land invasions, but equally to also prevent those who are using their farm portions and selling them out for illegal dwellings. But that's a municipal thing that municipalities must deal with, utilizing their bylaws to prevent such actions. Lack of consequence management, I think one to an extent has spoken about that. We're insisting on extracting consequence management and people to perform. Chairperson, I think I'll leave it there and leave the difficult questions to my colleagues, Kumutso and Babu Maiba, to respond to, or Councillor Honourable Hlonga or Hlongani to respond to. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, can we allow the colleagues from SALGA to make additions or assist in the questions that were not answered by Mr. Baloyi?
Okay, Chair Kumutso, can I go if Councillor Hlongani is covered? Okay. So just, I think Councillor Baloyi has basically answered all the questions, but just probably one, the main one that I just wanted to add to is it was on the issue around the unfunded mandate. Maybe just to add that in December, the special budget between Treasury Coctor and SALGA, there was a specific paper focusing on the issue around unfunded and underfunded mandates. And the resolution of that budget lokhotla was basically for COCTA to take the recommendations through to deal with the overall aspects around unfunded mandates. And as committee members would be aware, that currently in terms of the division of revenue is that money follows functions as allocated by the constitution, which has created a number of challenges in the sector. And I think COVID and how the sector also responded to the issues during COVID and the directive also exposed that particular aspect to a great deal that really necessitated a much bigger reflection on the issue around an unfunded mandate and to basically prove that particular issue. And then I think Councillor Baloyi also covered the issue around the water losses and the various aspects and interventions by SALGA. But nevertheless, to just say that currently overall in the sector, the water losses are currently sitting at around 41%. And then lastly, just adding on the consequence management. I mean, over and above the direct engagement that we have with mayors and municipal managers, we started in the previous year to make sure that repeat funding are basically addresses, but we have entered into partnership with various professional bodies. In this particular instance would be government auditors, the South African Institute of Government Auditors, SAICA as well, CIPS that looks at supply chain processes. But in the main, the benefit we're looking to extract out of those partnerships over and above capacity building partnerships is the fact that any member of that professional, any of those professional bodies must actually adhere to certain ethical standards. And we basically now require, and we've requested through our agreements with the various professional bodies, that they need to hold their members accountable that are basically operating in the local government sphere, because we realize that we cannot do it alone, basically. In partnership with the professional bodies and also insisting on the departments that have got executive authority on the various, on the sector as well, in terms of extracting the levers that are currently provided for within the legislation to make sure that those that basically falter are basically held accountable and there's basically consequence management. But lastly, also the NEC, through various engagement with the AG and the good relationship that the AG has had over the years, basically with SALGA, and also the fact that the legislation has been amended to empower the AG to basically follow through on these transgressions and issues around material irregularities, that it was resolved in June already, that AG must basically refer those matters to SIU that needs to be referred and basically report back in terms of progress, in terms of the NEC. So that's pretty much what is being done currently to make sure that there's basically follow through in all of these issues that are basically coming through in terms of the audit report. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mekhumoso. Saga, are you done?
Through you, Chair, just with your permission. I'm Nceba from SALGA. It's just to add a little bit. Although I know our NEC member, Baloyi, has adequately covered, I just wanted to touch on the aspect. I think Honorable Member Aukamp also touched on it, particularly in terms of the capacity of the incoming councillors. SALGA, in fact, is currently seized with the rollout of the integrated councillor induction program. In Limpopo province, it started yesterday and it's going to roll out until early next year on the initial one, and that would be followed by the portfolio-based councillor induction program. What I wanted to highlight is then that in the package of the councillor induction program, it also incorporates an aspect dealing with ethical conduct, where the councillors would then be taken through that, and they would also need to sign on the code of conduct, particularly in terms of ethical conduct to be adopted going forward. So it is part of SALGA's mandate in building this capacity to also ensure then that the newly incoming councillors are capacitated, but wholly agree with Councillor Baloyi had indicated that the function of these incoming councillors and the high turnover rate, it's a function of political parties who actually deploy them. But once they are there, we are responsible for their training. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Nceba. I think we are done with SALGA. Members, are you fine with the responses? Do you feel that your questions have been addressed?
I've not had the response, Chairperson.
Okay. There's somebody who was speaking before you or behind you, Honorable Mpisi. Who's that? Is it Honorable Randall? Okay.
No, there's no one from my side, Deche.
Okay. I think honorable members are fine with the questions. We are still in the process of finalizing the issue of DORA. We will see you tomorrow, those who are in the provinces. And I think now we can release SALGA, but the provincial delegates, please stay behind. And now we go to honor to Mr. Parks, Comrade Parks, Matthew.
Yeah, sure. I just want to take I assume you want me to respond to the honorable members' questions as well, Comrade Chair.
You want to respond now?
No, I was assuming you wanted me to respond to some of the questions the members want.
Yes, yes. I want you to respond now.
Okay, sure. No, thanks very much, Comrade Chair. Yeah, I think just to appreciate, Comrade Chair, the questions from the honourable members. I mean, I think on most issues, Comrade Chair, that we are largely singing from the same hymn sheet to varying degrees. I think to Honourable Ryder, and I think also Comrade Honourable Karim also raised it about collective bargaining. I think when the previous Minister of Finance, Honourable Chitumbuani, had walked away from the 2020 wage agreement, that really set back collective bargaining quite significantly in the public service. It really undermined the trust relationship, and I think it will take some time to rebuild it. But I think we do want to appreciate the new Minister of Finance, Comrade Madiba's commitment in the budget speech to respect collective bargaining, to engage. And we agree, Comrade Chair, that I think to the essence of Ryder's, Honourable Ryder's point is that we need to find a win-win agreement, one which from workers' point of view protects the lower middle income earners, the nurses, the teachers, the police officers from inflation, et cetera. And I appreciate that many public servants are highly indebted. You know, you will have a police constable earning 180,000 rand a year, a nurse earning a similar amount, single woman, mother of two children, for example, struggling to survive. On the one hand, and I think also to appreciate that when a trade union agrees to an agreement and sells the compromises to the workers, they would also have a confidence that government would honor that agreement. Although it makes it very difficult if you don't know if your partner will honor the agreements. But I think also we do appreciate, which I think is the essence of Honorable Ryder's point, we need to save the state. We need to ensure the state can survive. Workers cannot afford to see the state collapse. It would be public servants who would suffer the first if the state couldn't pay salaries, if it retrenched, if it went to the IMF for a bailout. And we're mindful of that. We're mindful of protecting the gains of post-1994 on the social wage front to the poor across society. So I think it is trying to find a balance. I think that's why, Comrade Chair, you saw that unions really sold to workers in the public service a below inflation increase for this past year, one which in many aspects was a gratuity once-off payment, et cetera. And I think that was informed, and it was a tough thing for those unions to sell it, but trying to find a compromise, a win-win balance. I think to Honorable Ryder, and I think Honorable Ockham also raised this around the headcount. I mean, just to state a couple of quick figures. In 1994, we had, as you would know, 34 million South Africans, about a million public servants. Today, with almost double the population of about 60 million, we have about 1.3 million public servants. So you can see the headcount has actually been decreasing in terms of the population growth. And Honorable Mpisi was right to say that you have about 100,000 vacancies in the state at any given point in time. We've seen in many frontline service departments, be it teachers, be it home affairs, huge vacancies and the impact upon the teacher-learner ratio, the unmanned tables or queues at home affairs. We've seen in the police service the declining headcount, which is very worrying. But I think also Honorable Ockham Ryder raised it about there is a need, for example, to redeploy personnel to priority areas. So, for example, in the police, we've been raising for some time, there's a need to shift staff officers from head office, from provincial offices, from desk duty, where about two-thirds of the staff are deployed, to community policing, to visible policing, to specialized units, et cetera, to make better use of the resources we have. I think, Chair, we don't agree with all the comments of members about the school sanitation project. It really is a national embarrassment. It can't be accepted. And really, next year, it should be a priority. More especially, Honourable Chair, when you consider that we're in a COVID-19 pandemic and sanitising is a key element of the measures to protect ourselves. And it can't be justified in a modern industrial democracy like South Africa that we can't ensure girls have decent sanitation in our townships, in our rural areas, at their schools, etc. Chair, on to the point of procurement, which I think a few members raised. I think, look, we want to see basically two things. One right now is that you have a multiplicity of public procurement systems across the state, if we include the entities, local government, SOEs, et cetera. Often in local government, it literally is a free-for-all. You would hear municipalities who just simply take three written quotes. Open, it's wide open to forgery, to corruption, to abuse, et cetera. If you have a single online procurement system, which is transparent, members can see it, the media can see it, it opens it up to small businesses across the country. It opens up to space to competition. I think that's one thing. It'll also make it easier for DTIC, for example, to monitor and treasury as well, local procurement, to affect savings, et cetera, to tackle and minimize corruption. So always saying around centralizing public procurement, I just say for certain large items, which is centralized public procurement, not small things, not the school lunches, not how many chairs are you going to buy at or whatever department, but there's certain large mass items we can procure and save significant amounts, be it PPEs, be it medical supplies, be it vehicles. And we've already seen some excellent work being done in that regard by the Chief Procurement Officer with significant savings to the fiscus. So I think that's the kind of thing. We're not saying to micromanage, but there's certain large items we should do it. But I think also Comit Chair was quite worrying is that Treasury has made a commitment before about blacklisting companies which fall foul of the procurement requirements, of paying tax, of all the legal requirements. Yet we've been told that blacklisting has not been effective. Those companies are still being allowed to receive tenders, etc. We are pleased with the Minister Mbalula's commitment that there will be an announcement on a new approach to the ETOL saga. We're hoping that'll be the end of it, but we'll wait for the speech in February. To Honourable Tutoi, Comrade Chair, look, I think the main thing we want to see really on taxes, if we can have a choice, is the capacitation of SARS. That is the easiest way to generate more tax revenues to the state. And I think for SARS, it's one about us reinforcing SARS and the appropriations. It's also about SARS having a much more robust program to tackle customs evasions with this significant money being lost. It's about plugging the loopholes where the rich exploit. And I think also, Comrade Chair, I think about having the lifestyle audits of the rich. We do think, Comrade Chair, there has been some increase upon tax upon the working class, middle class in the past 5 years, from the VAT to not adjusting the tax brackets for inflation for the lower bracket groups. And the point is that we should shift the burden more to the wealthy. We do take Honourable Tutoi's point about finding that what they call the balance. We do appreciate we're reaching the top of the tax ceiling, but we think there is some space for some tax increase upon the wealthy through inheritance, estate duties, etc. And I think Treasury is looking at that. But of course, Chair, the real solution also is to manage the state fiscal better to stop the leakages to corruption, etc. So, Comrade Chair, to Honourable Tutoi about the 350 and the violence. I think our point there, we agree. The violence was in KZN and Gauteng was orchestrated by a criminal element for political reasons, etc. That's true, but also it fed into a sea of poverty, of hopelessness and despair. Many people who were looting were simply out of frustration. Of course, there were criminals, there are people who are wealthy who are looting, but the point is it's unsustainable to have a society where 8 million people have no source of income. But of course, the social relief measures should be a medium and short-term intervention. The long-term intervention has to be to ensure everybody has a job and they can take care of themselves and are not dependent upon the state for social grants. I would agree with Honourable Tutoi, Chair, on the public presidential employment program. It's still early stages. We need to monitor the impact to learn the lessons of the EPWP and the community works programs. But we've been quite pleased to see very positive responses from SATU, the schools, from other unions around the positive impact it's had. And hence, we're quite keen to see it being expanded, et cetera. And we appreciate government's support. Chair, to Honourable Okam, around the bans of doing business with the state, we have been raising it quite some time as COSATU. We think we need to include the leadership of political parties at a national, provincial, regional level when they're ruling parties. We need to look at the spouses and the children of ministers, et cetera. We can't afford, for example, Comrade Chair, every Sunday Times to see which minister's child got which tender. We're not saying the children of politicians, for example, can't do business. But can they not do business with the state when their parent is a minister? Yes, it's a compromise, but I think, Chair, given the pandemic of corruption, we need to tackle it, etc. Chair, also it goes beyond politicians. You would have seen the ESCOM reports where about 5,000 staff have been implicated. Several hundred are said to have contracts with ESCOM. So that has to be dealt with across the board, from politicians to management to officials, etc. We would support, as Honourable Okam was saying, and we've been raising it around lifestyle audits. We would agree with it 100% to office bearers in government, to management, to supply chain officials, to the entire state, including SOEs, etc. If you have nothing to hide, you will have nothing to fear. I know Honourable Karim drives a very modest, small little car, so I'm sure he'll be the first to volunteer. And of course, you will see others who you would question, Comrade Chair, where did this one get a Porsche Cayenne from? And it's something we've been discussing as well internally in COSATU as well, because the public is fed up with corruption and all of us need to be seen to be leading the fight. Chair, I think also one other issue around the headcount, we've also been raising the need to consolidate parts of the state. We have often SOEs and entities which duplicate each other. We often have municipalities which are simply not sustainable from a rates base. They're too small. You know, Prince Albert Municipality, for example, it'll never have a sufficient rate space to sustain. So we'd rather see consolidation to avoid collapse. Chair, but I also want to agree with Honourable Okam that for us, we don't expect the state to employ everybody. It can't. The real solution is to grow the economy. So hence we're pushing on, can we deal with the spectrum issues? Can we deal with the transit issues? Can we ensure ESCOM is working efficiently so the economy can grow? Sure, I think just to Honourable Moletsane's questions around the teaching assistants. Yes, I mean, SATU Teachers Union has been quite busy in the department working to make sure the teaching assistants are utilised properly, etc. I know that in KZN, SATU and COSATU had intervened with some of the teaching assistants weren't paid, similarly in the Eastern Cape, etc. I know around the community health workers and the ECD workers, Nahau has been doing quite a bit of work to improve the conditions, to get the community health workers permanent, and there's been good progress in that regard. I think we've seen in the budget, the MTPPS, the employment of 18,000 health workers. So that's a positive achievement, which we want to appreciate from government side. I think also we welcome the shift that we'll be moving ECD from social development to education, which will have better synergy, et cetera. And I know SATU and Nahau are quite involved in that front. I think to Honourable Mpisi, I mean, it's positive to hear from a former COSATU provincial chairperson that his federation is on the right track. And I would agree 100% from a chair, there is a need for us to do more work around the teaching assistants, but I think we would appreciate the step forward. And as long as we're making progress, that gives us a platform to continue to make further progress. We have been raising the issue of vacancies, and I think we do need to do more around it. But I know that PopCrew, SATU, Denosa, and Nahau have been raising it in their different sectors in the government around it. But I think we all need to do more around it. But I think we do appreciate some of the additional resources in the budget to try to address it. Comrade Chair, I wanted to respect Honourable Karim, who raised the legal issue that he must be the last one. So I wanted to leave him for last. To appreciate his message of support, that we are reasonable and pragmatic, etc.
Not a legal one, it's a political and moral one, Chairperson.
I think, Comrade Chair, and it might sound heresy, but I mean, COSATU has really tried our best to speak to solutions to the economy because our members' jobs are at stake. We need to be practical given the material conditions on the ground, facing workers, facing the economy, facing the state. We need to have measures which can be addressed today, not in 10, 20 years' time. So at times it might seem to be very kind of reasonable. But I think, Comrade Chair, we must amend the parliamentary rules to require Honourable Karim to refer to COSATU as radical and militant and revolutionary. But I think, Comrade Chair, just the point Honourable Karim raised on the Single Bargaining Council. Our unions have been raising it, and I think we're quite pleased that Treasury is warming up to the idea. We think it will benefit both sides of the equation. One, it makes it easier for the unions to have a single negotiating process, which also benefits government. It helps to address the disparities in government, where some get paid too little, others, where there's significant ballooning on top, etc. We think it'll benefit the state because you can have a single medical aid, a single pension fund. That's also going to benefit workers because often some of those other smaller funds are not sustainable. The conditions are not, protection are not very good. But it also benefits government from a budgetary perspective because it can plan better knowing this is one wage agreement for the entire state. So we think it is the way to go. And Commissioner, I think we agree with Honourable Karim around the NHI grant. We're quite worried and we felt we should have done more to reinforce the health department. I think, Chair, let me stop there. I think that is all the questions I hope I answered. And to say lastly, Commissioner, that Honourable Karim might have been around at Parliament for since 96, if I'm right, give or take. But he's still a young lion at heart, and he's done a fantastic job for the workers and the proletariat. So let me stop there, Comrade Chair. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Comrade Matthew. Can I check with the members if there are any other questions which are left out? Honourable Ryder and Honourable Karim.
Chair, just a question is, are we going to have some responses from Treasury today on some of the issues that have been highlighted through the presentations, or will that come at a later stage?
Okay. Honourable Karim.
Yeah, Chairperson, firstly, I should, in the interest of openness and transparency, tell you that I paid Matthew to say what he said, right? So at least you know that. Secondly, I came in 1994. But basically, what I'm saying, Chairperson, is actually ANC policy, really. Sometimes we forget it, but we are supposed to be, and we are, biased towards the workers and really. And I think it's fair to say also, Chairperson, he was being unduly generous, but the truth of the matter is that increasingly what we found compared to, let's say, the first 15, 20 years, I don't know whether it's good or bad, I'm simply observing, that COSATU has become a bit more conciliatory. It's reflections on what's the limits and possibilities of the country, given the parlous state of the economy and even more the budget, they've been much more temperate about it. And I think it's a tactical shift. But clearly, today, for example, it was very hard to see what any party, obviously peer parties are free, there's a multi-party democracy, and so it should be, any party could disagree with what they were saying, actually. There's very little, really. Where we might disagree, if we're not in the ANC, I mean, it may be about the timing, about achieving those things. But those are very basic things, Chairperson. And finally, you know, this debate we keep having about what is the role of the state, right? Is it to create jobs? Is it like an employment agency? Or is it there to create the conditions for economic growth? Well, to some other degree, it's both. In other words, we're not like an established democracy. We're an emerging democracy. We have huge inequalities, the worst in the world from what we are told, right? All the countries for which statistics are available. And it's much more difficult for us to jettison people from jobs in the public sector than it might be for Sweden or, you know, one of the more established democracies which have a reasonable rate of economic growth. So by keeping people in jobs, you're also recirculating money. You're helping to grow the economy. It's true that the state can't absorb all the unemployed. That would be absurd. But it's also true that where conditions have been created, particularly, Chairperson, let's be frank, in the era of Thabo Mbeki, right, we had done so much to meet the requirements of the private sector. In fact, you'll recall, Chairperson, as a former trade unionist, I mean, the WTO agreement on tariffs and so on, they reduced much more substantially and faster than even the world body required, right, to encourage private sector investment and growth facilitated by the private sector. Now, you know, COSATU and SACTU in particular were up in arms about that because of the job losses in the clothing sector. But even after all of that, the private sector didn't really come to the party. And quite a bit of the growth was also stimulated by the state through its investment programs and so on. So, you know, we need a better balance between the polarization around that debate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Karim. I think you have covered everybody to speak after everyone have spoken. We're now settled.
Oh, I'm sure Dennis is going to get mad and funny.
No, he won't. He won't. I think most of the issues we seem to find each other. We seem to be comfortable with the presentations so far and the responses that we have received. And for those of us who still think that the multi-year agreement, that when we talk about the wage agreement, needs to be revisited. And I would want to request that before you come to that decision, maybe you need to do your own research if you were not in the space then. What was the impact when we had yearly or annual agreement negotiations, and the difference that we had when we have to go for or agree on multi-year agreements, and also sharing with the comrades who were there, it was very hard. It took a lot on members of the public service and organized labor, and more especially for us as leaders to convince members to agree to see that this is a better option. But then let's compare the two before you take the decision to can recommend. But it was a good achievement to have multi-year agreement. And once we have an agreement, it's legal. There's nothing that justifies changing. So we understand where the COSATU found itself at and had to come to a compromise position. But going forward, public servants must not be always be the sacrifice. And when we also talk about the wage bills in the public service, when we talk about health, for us to get a quality service, we need enough personnel. And such a department is personnel driven. So you have to put more money for you to recruit more nurses and doctors and specialists and staff. To keep the hospitals clean, you need those people to be there. You need people, you know, warm bodies. You need teachers for you to have enough teachers at schools and other people or home bodies who are doing the work. For you to have enough resources, human resources in terms of police, you need more police. So the wage bill, of course, is going to go up if you employ more people, and we employ more people for us to get more, to get better services. Other things, I think I agree with you, we can't compromise. The issue of pit toilets and bucket system, they are not supposed to be in our agenda anymore. Because we've been talking about them so long, budget have been put aside. And at some point, budgets have been spent. Where has it spent? Did we have value for money? If we didn't, was there consequence management? If there wasn't, what do we do now? For us to address these issues, because it's not about us. Is about the people who have put us here to serve them. Once we understand that we are servants of the people, then I think everything will fall into place. And according to me personally, I think government has done everything possible. You know, also with the recovery plan, what the president is doing in terms of going to other countries, whether in the continent or outside the continent, in terms of engaging those countries or those states to come and invest. Because if the economy is responding well, or the status of our economy is in good condition, then government is in a place to create an environment for public sector to employ more people. So I think we need to encourage those things and acknowledge, but also criticize and take harsh decisions where we think people are not done on purpose. With those remarks, honorable members, I think we have come to the end of the engagement of our two presentations. I really want to thank the team from SALGA, Comrade Matthew, for always being there. And I think the workers of this country must be proud of yourselves as an organization, that all the time, even if other people seem not to have an interest, we show that you will always make a presentation and make the voice of the workers, the interest of the workers, to be there in the public and represent them. We really appreciate that very much. They need to be proud of that, and we encourage other. We have not written them off. We still encourage you, other organizations, to please come to Parliament, because this is your Parliament, to come and speak and present the interest of the people that you're representing. Thank you very much, SALGA and COSATU. Thank you very much. We are going to release, SALGA is gone already. We are going to release Comrade Matthew, unless he wants to say something. I see you are saying goodbye by a show of hands, thumbs up. Thank you very much. There's honorable members. Can I check with the secretariat if we are making the quorum to can deal with the one set of the meeting of last week? Lubabalo?
Thank you, Sir President. Before I respond to that, I'm not sure if I'm out of order. Honorable Ryder, if I may remind you, he asked if maybe you were not going to give Team National Treasure a few words, and Mr. Bakis is on the platform. Maybe he might have a few words to say. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Honorable Ryder, my apologies. I didn't ignore your request on purpose. It just slipped my mind. And I think it's very important to have Treasury to have a say, to comment on what has been raised here on this platform. Honorable Mr. Hu, who is representing?
I can recognize Mr. Pakis, Chairperson. Maybe there are other team members that I can recognize, but Mr. Pakis is.
Okay. Team Treasury, who's leading?
Good morning, Honorable Chair. I'm responsible for the local government fiscal framework.
Thank you. Can you open your video if possible, please, Mr. Pakis?
Let me do that, Chair. I think you can see me now, Chair.
Yes, now we can see you.
Yes, no, thank you, Chair. I think as a way of responding to some of the points that were raised, it's important to have a note that there are some, I think, points of discussion that the Treasurer will have to provide responses, formal responses on, especially the one that related to the ETOLs. It is not a matter that was discussed, and I think a relevant team in the Treasury would be in a position to provide a more substantive response in terms of how that is going to unfold. So I'm going to apologize to the honorable members for that. Just perhaps to jump on one other issue that was discussed in terms of the unfunded mandates that municipalities are struggling with. As I'm thinking, honorable members, I must apologize for Wendy, who is in another meeting with the National Department of Health and all other relevant stakeholders, where they are discussing the issue of the primary health and environmental health services. So those are two of the issues that are currently underfunded in the local government space, with the view of finding way forward in terms of how government takes that one forward. There's also a big discussion point on the less than optimal grant performance, which I think we acknowledge and we've spoken to in our presentation, and especially when we're talking to the kind of reductions that we're proposing. The question really that the Treasury is grappling with is how then do we use the levers in the grants to incentivize better planning beyond the individual projects? Because what we're seeing now is that municipalities plan per project, and as money is provided for a holistic a program of action, then they fail. So you would see that it is much easier, for instance, in a municipal space to do a roads project than it is to do a water and sanitation one. So it's just a question of how then do we then use our levers in the grant system to ensure that at least we incentivize them to a point where they are able, you know, to carry out the whole program in terms of the budgeting. So from the planning, the reporting, the implementation are levers as well. On the question of the effect in the grant and whether that's the way to go, an interpretation is, I think we're pretty clear on this one, that you know the planning framework needs to ensure that municipalities are adequately prepared, you know, to take on the responsibility. So we don't think that the indirect grants are a permanent solution to the system. You know, they are just a stopgap to ensure that services are being delivered to the communities in the local government space. For instance, the kind of proposals we are making over the MTF in terms of the asset management reforms, where we want the municipal infrastructure grant, you know, to have an integral component, you know. So the idea there is that, you know, those reforms would then support the rehabilitation of infrastructure, you know, if it means that, you know, new infrastructure is not required. Because what we're seeing also is that municipalities find it quite easier to always build new things, especially in the build-up to elections. You know, the cutting of the ribbon phenomenon was pretty prominent. You know, so now we need them to be supported in order to be able to do a proper job in terms of determining really what it is that needs to be done, and we want sector departments to play a key role in that. So we don't envisage, honourable members, that the would play a bigger role than they should be in the system. So we, in our discussions at MTEC, we actually thought that should there be a need for an indirect grant in the system, it shouldn't last for more than 3 years. So it should always be with the intention that it is for a specific purpose, but also during that period, you know, and the sector department that is involved should be in a position to then capacitate the municipality to be able to do the work themselves. We also, I think, also linked to the direct and indirect grants, the implementation readiness of sector departments as well, you know, should also be key in terms of the key parameters to improve performance. The experience we have, unfortunately, honorable members, is not a good one, because even though we do have those indirect grants, I think honorable writer spoke in to the RBIC one. So the experience we have in the water sector shows that even the national department, you know, do not perform these functions any better when they take them up. So which is important that, you know, we emphasize that we must try by all means possible to then capacitate local government to be able to do the work on its behalf. I think honorable members also as the treasury, we have been caught by, I would say, a surprise, because the emergence, I think there was a big discussion point around what was happening in the city of Cape Town in terms of the MyCity, and we partly, you know, have to shoulder the blame there, because we allocated more money than the city really required or could potentially be able to use in the current financial year, which does mean that we also need to tighten and relook at how the appraisal process into these projects, how we do those, so that we ensure that we don't allocate funds that the municipality is unable to deliver on. And having said, honourable members, I think sometime last year we spoke to you about, you know, when we spoke to issues of service delivery and lack of effective and functioning of local government, we indicated that we were undertaking a review, a diagnostic study of the local government capacity building space. And we're happy to say since then we have completed the study, and there are quite a number of you know, findings that came from that. So this study really was cutting across all the sectors, all the role players in terms of the capacity building at local government, including provincial and municipalities themselves, you know. So there was to better understand, you know, the root causes of capacity constraints. And honorable members, we will say more about this in the main budget, because we're also now preparing a plan of action so that we're able to then implement these the recommendations that are coming from the diagnostic study. But I mean, it suffice to say that, you know, we should perhaps just indicate that, you know, the capacity building is really significantly larger than we previously anticipated and may have indicated to yourselves. So I think to yourselves, we may have indicated that we're looking at a capacity building system that was worth 3 billion rands. But now that we've done the work, we actually know that it's much bigger than that. There's actually about 9 billion rands in expenditure targeted at improving the capacity of local government, you know. And what complicates it even more is that there are about 40 different state actors that play a role in terms of trying to build that capacity. And I think it doesn't take a genius then to say, you know, we continue to demonstrate a poor performance, then where has the problem been? You know, so the diagnostic is really starting to talk to some of the issues that have been reported by municipalities in terms of how this could be done better, looking at some of the international best practices and how we can adapt those to the local realities, but also hearing the many various players in the sector in terms of what we can do. So we are looking at the programmatic action, which you know, really starts looking at a more collaborative approach in how we build the capacity at local government, rather than the piecemeal where SALGA plays their part in the treasury would then maybe focus on the financial aspects, and then COPTA does some work in terms of governance and systems, and then you would then see maybe a water and sanitation trying to capacitate the water department. So that system is not working. So we're looking now at how then do we have this approach where the whole of government through the DDM would then start working into ensuring that we actually get, you know, the value for money for the spend for the many billions that we spend in terms of local government. And we're hoping to start rolling out the findings of the review, you know, over the 2022 MTF as well, because there are also some overlaps that we identified, which we are trying to work with the transferring officers now to see how we could put those together. Honorable members, that is all I could answer. As indicated earlier on, that the issue of the e-polls will be, I think, will be responded to by other colleagues in the Treasury. But from ourselves, we have noted the comments by the honorable members, and we will give them the message, whether it's going to be another invite from the committee or there was going to be a written input that will be required. We will be guided by you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pakis. I see your response has triggered Honorable Detoit to want to say something. But before I allow Honorable Detoit, Honorable Pakis, I think when you said you're busy preparing for the budget, February budget for 2021-22, and you are looking or considering what is been raised in your diagnostic report, I think what needs to also be taken into consideration is what the public have been raising through ourselves through these committees. Consider our recommendations also as the committees, because we don't want to talk for the sake of talking. Consider what the FFC is also raising, and the criticism analysis from the PBO, and all of us as role players. I'll request that you don't become stereotyped and look at one diagnostic report, but what provinces are raising, what we raise as committees and the portfolio committees, what municipalities or SALGA is raising on behalf of municipalities also needs to be taken into consideration when we do when you prepare the budget, because the budget must speak to the needs of the people. In that regard, Honorable Titoit.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I don't want to respond to National Treasurer. I appreciate them coming in so quickly and taking part in this discussion. I do, however, have another engagement in the plenary that's taking place as we speak. Since they're starting with social development, I need to pose three questions to the ministers there, and I want to know if I can excuse, please.
Okay. I think, Lubabalo, you can help us, because there are members who are going to participate in the plenary in the ministerial briefings. Will we still have the quorum? I don't know if Honorable Mletsani is also going to participate there, but we thought okay. We will be done before the meeting, the actual plenary.
Okay, maybe Chairperson, from our side, we must consider compromising. We are up to date with our minutes. This was the minutes of the last week on Friday that we're going to consider now. Maybe we can extend this minute and consider them on Thursday, Chairperson, so that we can release members if it's okay with the chair.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing. If we don't reach the quorum, we cannot deal with the minutes. And I think because it's a one set of the minutes of last week, we can compromise and deal with them by this week so that we don't have a set of meeting of minutes for several meetings. Let me take this opportunity to thank you all members. All provincial participants, the media, the support staff and all the stakeholders who participated in this process. Tomorrow, honorable members, please, let's go to our provinces, or whether it's visual or physical, but I think it's visual. In my province, it's visual. Let's go and seek mandates from our portfolio committees in the legislatures, so that we can come back and report. And hopefully by Friday, provinces will be done with the final mandates for us to finalize the report and adopt the report and present to the House the following week. Thank you so much,
Chairperson, sorry. Sorry to intrude, but we've got a meeting at 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock as well of the SECOF. We've got a Select Committee on Finance meeting because we have to process the tax bills and the financial sector law amendment bill today. Please note to members. We got the solution from the House.
Oh, I thought it's after plenary. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So 1 o'clock, honorable members. We'll log in for finance to deal with the TLAP and
thank
other.
You.
Yes. Thank you very much. See you then, honorable members. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Keep well.
Keep well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.